Hello there. It's Threesome Podcast 27 with Lex and Stacy. How are you doing, Stace?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. At press time right here, I'm in some really crappy weather, so hopefully we won't have any problems.
It's about time someone else got it.
Yeah. Well, we're getting it.
It has been a very cold, awful, bitter month in Michigan.
It's been a great day today. I watched the first episode of season 3 of House of Cards. I couldn't wait, so I went home.
And, that's right. It starts today.
Yeah. I went home and got my appetite for that taken care of with episode 1. It did not disappoint. As a matter of fact, it did not disappoint in the first 2 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, they start off seasons right. I don't know if you saw season 1.
I saw both seasons.
All right, so you remember how the season 1 started with the dog?
Yes.
You know, with his "I do what's necessary" speech, even if it doesn't please others. And today, this isn't going to go to press time until 3 days from the release. So if you don't want to hear what happened, you have not seen it yet, I'll give you 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Within 2 minutes of the beginning of this episode.
Is it going to ruin it for me?
Nah, not really.
Okay.
But some people would look at it that way, but I just think you'll laugh. Within 2 minutes, he pissed on his dad's grave.
Well, how about you?
With a motorcade of cars just right over the hill.
Good for him.
The motorcade pulls up. He gets out with flowers. The security detail gets out. You know, a few reporters, like White House reporters, you know, that they take with them for photo ops and stuff like that, are there. And he turns around. He goes, "I'm going by myself." And he walks up the hill and walks a little bit over the hill and says a few choice things to his dad, which don't seem that bad. And then he pisses on his gravestone.
Oh, Frank Underwood. Initials FU.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I'm sure, on purpose.
Yes. So that's the way it started off, and then it just goes from there.
Rock on.
So
is Claire just as devastatingly awesome as always?
Oh, God, I want to fuck Claire so bad.
Robin Wright is one of those women who kind of defies the laws of nature and gets better as she gets older, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like the Sean Connery of women.
She's the new Blythe Danner. Who's got to be in her upper 60s or low 70s by now. And I saw her on the episode of The Slap last night. And she, I would still go there.
Really?
Yeah. I would. There is something about that woman that drives me crazy.
Is it because she seems kind of delicate and fragile?
She, no, just the opposite. She seems like she can just roll with it. You know, and she's got that dainty Southern attitude, but it's kind of like that. I've seen it all. There's nothing you really can do to upset me or faze me. You know. She's,
well, having to deal with Gwyneth as her daughter probably has, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But she is, she's an amazing woman. Great actress. Just, I think she's just hot.
Well, there's, good.
Yeah.
And if I ever run into her, I'll be sure to let her know.
Oh, if I run into her, I'm hitting that.
She's a widow now.
Yeah, she is. She should be ready for a good thrashing.
A good lexing.
Yeah. It's like, look, you don't know me. But by the time I get done with you, you're going to want to. For whatever precious years you have left.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be so blunt.
You know.
But you're in your 70s, and I still want to have sex with you. That should count for something.
I remember a long time ago, and I don't know who the woman was. She, I don't think, was an actress, or if she was, never anyone really well known. I think she was more like a New York socialite kind of thing, but she was in her 70s or 80s. And this was like 10, 15 years ago. She might even be dead now. I don't know. But there was an interview with her where she talked about Colin Farrell trying to fuck her.
Oh, what's her name? Elizabeth Taylor.
Nope, this was not her. This was, as I said, some woman. I would remember Elizabeth Taylor. This was some other older woman.
Well, that happened with Elizabeth Taylor. Colin Farrell and her had a relationship.
Well, good for him. He's had Angelina, too. He's pretty much had everyone. I think he might be at the top of the list of one of Hollywood's biggest man whores.
Yeah, this just in. He likes to fuck. So what? I would, too, if I were him. If I looked like that guy, I'd be just tripping and falling into pussies everywhere.
Uh-oh. And apparently, I got another one.
And apparently he is. Old and new.
I guess that's the thing, though. If you can have anyone you want, why? And I guess I would understand Liz Taylor because of who she was and the iconic thing. But this other woman just did not strike me as that.
He puts that moment with Elizabeth Taylor as one of his major moments of his life. He actually felt a connection with her and enjoyed going to bed with her.
Well, good for him. I mean, and good for her, too. Yeah. It's nice that she wasn't being a fetish or something, you know?
Well, if you can imagine a young Colin Farrell watching, like, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and seeing the genius of her acting in it.
And plus just how she looked then, you know? I mean, yeah. She was Liz Taylor,
well,
you know?
When Virginia Woolf came out, I think she was in her mid-40s.
And that was, of course, back when there wasn't prevalent plastic surgery and stuff.
Right.
You were forced to age gracefully as an actress.
And, her and Richard Burton, I think, were on their third go-around marriage-wise, or fourth at that point. And, you know, they said, this is either brilliant acting or just another day at the Burtons. But I don't know if you're familiar with the movie, but
I don't think I've seen that one.
But they come home with another couple, and the couple's actors you're familiar with, you know, that went on to be in sitcoms and all kinds of things for the next 30 years. But they come home and kind of put their life on display in front of them. And, you know, you get the sense it's going to be like a swing type situation or whatever. And they come back and just get all fucking analytical on each other and bring those two into the fold in their conversations, you know, like saying just horrible things to each other. And it's like Liz Taylor would like look at, you know, the chick and go, don't be uncomfortable, darling. This happens all the time. You know.
Yeah, see, it sounds very much, what was it, Long Hot Summer, her and Paul Newman? And yeah, it sounds like they had a very similar relationship.
This is so much darker. This is for its time, a really fucked up, dark movie. Without having any sexual content or anything like that, it is as uncomfortable to watch as uncomfortable gets.
So you, I shall love it.
You really feel for these two people they brought into this. Yeah, you know, I don't know as a kid or as an adult if you ever brought into another person's bad relationship at a social gathering or whatever the case is. But
I was gonna say, I think everyone has had that moment.
But you know how unpleasant that can be.
Yes.
And if you haven't been brought in, you may be the person that made somebody uncomfortable, but there wasn't anything unidentifiable about this movie where most of the scenery takes place in their living room. I mean, it probably costs next to nothing to shoot this movie.
You get a lot of that usually like in your 20s, coming home from the bar,
yes,
or
yes,
something
yes.
happens and there's that ride home when the other people, you have to ride with them and you're hearing them, you fucking looked at her, and, you know, and it's
yes,
just like...
Yes, yeah. Yeah, but this was the adult version of it. These are people that are past the you looked at her thing. This gets into seedier, deeper, darker shit. Psychoanalyzing the whole thing. I mean, it is an amazing movie. It's one of my favorite of all time. And you know I love the twisted shit.
Yes.
The more twisted, the better. And this one is up there at the top. If you have not seen Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, you are missing out on one of the greatest performances by two actors that, even though they fucked each other and were married to each other four or five times, it doesn't matter. To me, it makes it even harder to do that scene if you're that connected.
Yes. But there was probably a lot of bitterness that helped them.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't have, maybe they didn't have to reach as deep on some scenes that they did in past movies, you know, to evoke emotion or whatever the case is. But the fact is, it is seamless, it is nasty, and at the same time, they have this, you know, when these people leave, or maybe even in front of them, I'm going to fuck your brains out because we've had bourbon tonight and some spirited conversation. You know, and it is, oh God, you just got to see it. I don't want to ruin it for you.
As I said, I will add that to my to watch list.
Mm-hmm. You won't be sorry.
I did like the Paul Newman one. And it sounds similar, as you said. Virginia Woolf sounds darker, yeah. But there was a lot of that. They just hate each other.
Yeah. I mean, I love Paul Newman. I think he's such an amazing actor. He's a much better actor than Richard Burton was. Unless Richard Burton was with Elizabeth Taylor.
Plus, Paul Newman had that face that really was meant to be chiseled out of marble. Like a Greek god, like in some Roman temple somewhere, you know.
A beautiful man.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah, but my favorite Paul Newman is the, you know, absence of malice, the verdict, Color of Money. His older years were my favorite movies of his.
So not Slapshot.
Oh, of course. You know, please. Yeah, I'm just talking about the dramatic shit.
No, there was that one with Jessica Tandy where he was a gambler or something. I don't know, when he was her handyman. I have always only caught it like on TV, like the second half of the movie. But I always loved that, and I couldn't even tell you what the name of it was. I think Bruce Willis is in it. But he's a drunk, disappoints his kids, you know, the typical Paul Newman thing.
Yeah. I mean, Absence of Malice with Sally Field was a fucking great movie. Did you ever
I've
see that?
I've never seen that.
Oh, my
no.
God. And he's like involved in this whole perpetrated scheme that took place. And they're trying to, reporters are trying to connect him to it. Police are trying to connect him to it. And in the end, he makes it so everybody's implicated. Ends up in a grand jury room with Sally Field, with the DA, with, you know, and Wilford Brimley's like a federal marshal who's got nothing to do with any of it, as the guy that's got the job to sort it all out, because Paul Newman's just perpetrated the perfect out, you know, and just fucking used everybody. But he cultivated a relationship with Sally Field, who was doing the story, and he was just working her like a bitch. He was just sending her on wild goose chases and not answering her questions when he damn well could have, and all that. And in the meantime, he, you know, fell in love with her. So in the room, in the end, he spares her. And and everybody's like pointing the finger at him. It's like, ask him about it. He's the one who did this. And, you know, and Wilford Brimley goes, are you that smart, sir?
Diabetes.
And he goes, everybody in the room smart. And they're all like, you son of a bitch. They're all like, they all know he's guilty, but then no, they have nothing on him. You have to watch it. It's just a great movie. And that's the broad strokes of it. You need to see the genius of the whole story. It's good. And then the verdict.
See, these were all movies that seemed to come out like when I was just at that age where I still didn't fully grasp grown-up movies.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You probably were about a teenager or so when these came out.
And they just weren't, you know.
But the verdict had James Mason in it. You know, who's just a stuffy British fuck, you know. And he was playing the big attorney, you know, for the hospital that was, you know, trying to wrong the patient and, you know, hide evidence, you know, of malpractice and so on and so forth. And Paul Newman's just a lawyer by himself, basically.
I might have seen parts of that, because doesn't he have like a dull, dingy office?
Yeah.
Dull, dingy. A lot of brown pants and stuff.
Yeah, just you know, the he's a journeyman lawyer. You know, nobody disrespects him. Nobody respects him. They just know who he is. He's been around for years, and he gets this giant case that nobody else wants to take. And in the end, his girlfriend, you know, tries to sell him out. You know, she works for the hospital, and they offer her a bunch of money, and she tries to fuck him over, and he gets over on her in the end. Saves his career, saves his dignity, saves his everything.
Rock on.
All because of the verdict.
It's amazing how that works out.
Yeah. So while we're talking actors and pictures and stuff like that, you kind of gave me some bad news coming up the steps here.
I know. Leonard Nimoy died today.
What did he die of?
Well, he was 83 and he had some sort of pulmonary thing. Mm-hmm. He had announced that he had it a while ago and he succumbed at home. So, I mean, it sounds like, you know, I know he just within the last week or two, he'd been hospitalized. I think they kind of figured he was circling the drain.
That sucks.
But it's very sad. It's Mr. Spock. It's like, you know, I wouldn't call myself a Trekkie per se, but it has been in my life, like my whole life, you know?
You're
kind of like
not a Trekkie.
It's like Robin Williams. He was always there. You always heard him narrating something or, you know, just popping up in weird places.
Yeah. No, I mean, come on, man. It's Spock.
Yes.
He was an icon.
Exactly.
I don't know if you ever saw William Shatner's interview show. It was like on IFC or something, or on the Learning Channel or something like that. But he interviewed like pretty strange people, and he and Leonard Nimoy got together for an interview.
Aww.
And
did it turn into Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I could see those two airing some shit, you know.
They kind of laughed about it, you know, like you know, 20 years down the road, this is silly, you know. Yeah, you know, Shatner's like,
you buffoon, you babbling buffoon.
Shatner was just kind of like, you know, Leonard, 30 years down the road, this is silly. So I decided to bring you in for an interview. He's like, it's about time. So they just talked about different things. They talked about things Leonard Nimoy was into, like art and stuff like that. They showed some of his art. He talked about some of the stuff he was passionate about. You know, he made a little bit of fun of, you know, Shatner and some of the stuff he's doing, you know, like Priceline and shit like that. And it was cool. It was like you watch the fences mended right in front of your eyes.
Right.
IFC has some cool shit like that.
Do they still have the Onion News?
I haven't seen that in a while. One of my favorite shows that were on, was on there was Henry Rollins.
Yes.
And one episode in particular that I think anybody who's into music has to see is about a 20-minute conversation between Henry Rollins and Gene Simmons just about the music industry. Just riveting. Fucking great stuff. I think if you go on iTunes or Netflix or something like that, you can find it.
Okay.
And just look for the Gene Simmons episode. I think it was just called The Henry Rollins Show or Interview with Henry Rollins or something like that. I had to do a little different searching and stuff like that to find it, but I found it. You can probably even find it on YouTube, to be honest.
Right.
And it was just crazy good TV if you're into music. Their takes on just the music industry, you know, different acts, the state of it now, so on and so forth, is just tremendous.
How old would you say it is? Like, how long
five
ago
years,
was that?
Five okay. to 7 years, tops.
So not a lot would have changed.
It's a timeless interview. You can see that interview in 20 years and the principles will apply. That's why it was so good.
Gotcha.
I mean, Gene Simmons last year said rock and roll is dead.
And then he promptly keeled over and died.
Nope. He's still here.
Oh, it's his reanimated corpse. It's zombie Gene Simmons.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. He has enough money to do that. But do check it out. It's good. I'm not a huge Henry Rollins guy. You know, I had a chance to meet him in person once, and he was just a dick.
Yeah, you kind of guessed that about him. I saw him in concert once down in Detroit. It was like on top of a parking garage, so you could get really close. I mean, it was almost like just like a band shell kind of thing. And that was fun, but I never spoken to him.
He just, it's not that he's a dick straight to you. He's just in his own intense little world.
Right.
Where
self-absorbed.
Yeah. It was disappointing because I think he's cool.
I know he was like really, for me at least, the first rock person where I kind of went, you know, he's smart. He has something to say and isn't just babbling. But then I have seen him where, just like what you said, I was like, there's something about him that just turns me off.
Yeah, and that's what it is. He's very intense about the things he cares about, and if you're not in the realm of that, then he has no time for you, is kind of the impression I get.
Right.
Yeah, we were doing some Album Network stuff with him, and he's like, you're not going to ask me about Black Flag, right? And I'm like, I don't know. First off, I'm not the one doing the interview. Tommy is. And second of all, I think that's a pretty big part of your career to leave out of a 30-minute interview.
Yes, that's like William Shatner saying, do not talk to me about Star Trek.
Yeah. and he says, I don't want to be defined by it. And I said, well, duly noted. I'll talk to the interviewer and let him know that's your wishes. And he goes, I don't need an errand guy to do it. He goes, where is he? And I'm like, well, you'll be sitting in a chair with him before the interview starts. So that would be your time to let him know what your limitations on Black Flag are. I wasn't going to do any errands for you and go find him and tell him. I'd just let you do that.
Right.
He goes, well, I wasn't calling you an errand boy. I'm like, yeah, listen, whatever. I'm just telling you. Any reservations or ground rules you have, you'll have your opportunity before the interview starts, okay? Thank you.
See, I dealt with that. I interviewed Tim Reed once, Venus Flytrap from WKRP. Mm-hmm. Can you name, I can't right now, because at the time I interviewed him, it was mid-90s, late-90s. There was some show he was on, and I can't even think of it right now. But when you hear Tim Reid, the black guy from WKRP, and he did not want to talk about that. He would only talk about the news show, which was fine, and I kowtowed to it, you know, and was like, sure, tell me about how great everybody is. But it's like, that's not what people want to hear. I'm sorry. You know?
No, it's, we, you know, we had Maynard from Tool on, and everybody was scared to death of him in the hallway. Like, you guys want Maynard on? It's like, you know, Peter was like, he's really, you know, he's one of these guys that'll turn his back or get up and leave. And Terry and I were like, who's he with? And he goes, Tool, man, you know, Perfect Circle. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, bring him in. So he comes in and he's holding this, like, box of, you know, this nice crate with a bottle of wine in it. And, you know, he had a glass of wine with him and all this stuff. And it's like, and I went, what's with the wine? He goes, that's all I want to talk about is my wine. I said, well, that's good, because I don't know what else to talk to you about anyway. And he laughs like, you're kidding, right? And Terry goes, so you have your own winery? He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm very passionate about it. And this is my second year. This is the first bottle of wine from the second year. And I'm like, are you going to open it? Do we get to try it? You know, he goes, you want some? And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, we want some. So he laughs and he opens it up and everything. And we do the interview with him. And I said, how many bottles of this does it take before your music sounds good?
Nice.
And he laughs out loud. And, you know, and Terry was busting his balls too. And sure enough, man, it was a great interview. We just talked about all kinds of different shit. And this girl, Asian girl that worked at the Edge named Lisa, walked in to put some logs in or something like that. And he goes, who's this? And we're like, keeper. She's yours.
Nice.
She goes, hey. It's like, hey, this is a rock star. You do what you're told.
Nice.
I mean, sorry. He's a winery person. You do what you're told. And he goes, yeah, it's better. Yeah, it's like the minute you respected him for his music, he had no time for you. It was really weird.
My experience with that was I saw Smashing Pumpkins. It was Garbage, Smashing Pumpkins, and White Zombie. And it was a great show. It was in Saginaw. Go figure that. And after the show, went backstage, and there's Billy Corgan. And you could see he was being polite, but that's all he was being, was polite.
Right.
And as soon as a fan said anything like, I love your music, man, I'm a huge fan, he was, again, walking that fine line between not being rude, but he was just like, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, and then would turn his attention to someone else. And when he was getting ready to leave, I walked up to him and I said, you know, hey, I've got a question for you.
God, my pussy's wet.
No, he smelled like vodka. It was weird, which I think he was not supposed to have been drinking at that time, but he wasn't acting drunk or anything.
Yeah.
And I said, I could see he was kind of like, but I said, you just performed with Pink Floyd at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they were inducted. What was that like? And he turned around, his eyes got big, and he sat there and talked to me, I'm not kidding, for 20 minutes about Pink Floyd. He talked about being on stage. They did Wish You Were Here.
Oh, cool.
And he said, I fucked up some chords, because he was playing guitar. And he's like, I'm sitting up there with Pink Floyd and I fucked up the chords. And I was like, oh my God, you know. And so it was us both just like geeking over Pink Floyd. We never mentioned Smashing Pumpkins or anything once. And then he was very cool. He's like, well, I'm going to go. And I'm like, all right, thanks, you know. And after I came back to, you know, the other employees, one of them was like, what were you guys talking about? He didn't talk to us. And I'm like, Pink Floyd,
talked about
man.
Smashing my pumpkin.
No. It was pumping all about
my
Floyd.
Pumping my pumpkin.
My kin. Yeah. No. I wasn't flirty or anything. I really didn't give a shit. I just wanted to hear, you know, about that. Because he had just done it like a month or two before that.
Yeah, it's always a blessing when you find out those guys are kind of cool if you make some sort of connection. You know, it's always a disappointment when you really love their music and respect, you know, them as songwriters and stuff like that, and you find out they're like total douchebags. Like, for instance, this is my favorite story. I've told this on the air before on Lex and Terry, but I'll share it on here. I took two winners from Rock 105 backstage, both of them very nice looking females. And I walked in the door with them, and John Mellencamp turns around. He goes, I'll take the blonde.
Oh, God.
And I went, hello, John. I'm the program director of Rock 105. These are my winners.
Not my whores.
Not your whores. That was, yeah. You don't even know who your whore guy is to go get you whores, obviously.
And that's what's having sex with Meg Ryan now.
Yeah. And he said, I'll take the blonde. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, you know, she was just this innocent little girl. And I said, what he means is he'll take whatever you have and sign it is what he means. And he kind of looks at me and smiles. And the other girl gives her a thing to sign. And he's like, did you girls enjoy the show? Did you have a good time? Yeah, he finally professionally moved on with it pretty quick. But he kind of gave me the look like, thanks, man. That could have been.
That's so gross.
Yeah.
So funny. And I know it happens. You know, I get it. I understand the whole thing, but it's just gross.
Yeah. It was just hilarious. It was just like, listen, these are my winners. They're not here to suck your dick. All right.
Fooey.
You need a lover that won't drive you crazy. These two will. So, because they're like 17. So let's get you somebody older, huh?
You know, I just read a story about that. It was the name of the story was something about, you know, terrible things that you don't know about some celebrities or something like that. And Jimmy Page was the very first person in this story. About how in the early 70s or something, he basically kidnapped a 14-year-old girl and held her like in his house for a few months because he was afraid that he was going to get caught having sex with an extremely underage girl. And they ended up, well, when he finally let her loose, I guess, they continued the relationship well past the time when she was legal and everything. But, you know, it was like, gross, you know, and then it went into the story about all of those famous groupies from that time that, like, Penny Lane from Almost Famous was based on.
Pamela DeBar.
It was I don't remember.
Pamela DeBar is like the most famous groupie ever.
These were two LA girls and they were like 14.
Who was the wife of Michael DeBar, who was in To Sir With Love and later on was in, I think he was in Power Station for a while.
Okay.
I think he took Robert Palmer's place in the second album from Power Station.
I didn't even know there was a second album.
Yeah, exactly. And he did a little bit of acting and stuff like that, but he apparently like dumped her and she became like the biggest leg spreading groupie ever, which is probably why he dumped her.
She was 14, you know, and was kidnapped by Jimmy Page. But she lost her virginity to David Bowie. So, you know, there's just, and then there were all these pictures of these girls with Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you guys were all just gross back then.
Yeah. Iggy Pop, David Bowie, same guy. Same looking guy.
He was kind of hot when he was young. He has not aged well. Boy, no. He gives Leathery a new name. But
he does. David Bowie, you know, I'm just pleased he was wanting to bone some chicks.
Yes.
This is that Mick Jagger rumor out there.
Well, that video from the 80s where the two of them are like singing very close to each other.
Yeah.
I can't think of what it was. It was on Friday Night Videos all the time.
Yeah. Just a weird... You know, you hear that about Britain, though, that it's like a rite of passage to fuck a dude before you leave junior high or something like that, and then you make your decision. Yeah. Well, it's like the Rumspringa of England, you know? It's, yeah. It's like, you know, they sit around the table, you know, there it's like you did a bloke, you know, and it's like yeah, he goes, yeah, me too. I had to. You know, wasn't my thing really. Over here it's like, dude, you fag. You know? Oh my god. You know? I don't care if you built 10,000 bridges, you sucked one dick, you're gay.
Which is too bad, you know, that label stays.
Yeah. But then again, I didn't have to suck a dick to decide I wanted girls. You know, it's not like, yeah, I don't think that's for me. Well, I'll take girls now.
I think, you know, I think actually it's very natural and normal. I'm sure that there are more men who are at least inquisitive, like kind of, I just would want to do it once just to see, but it's nothing I even like daydream about or anything. But there's, you know, because of the stigma, just don't ever mention it ever to anyone.
Yeah, it's never interested me, that's for damn sure.
And that's okay too.
Yeah, it's just yeah, but if that, I've certainly matured to the point where whatever somebody wants to do, I don't care. I really don't.
Right.
You know, if a friend of mine said, yeah, dude, I fucked some dudes when I was young and it's not my thing anymore, I'd be like, good for you. Whatever.
You know, sex is one of those things, if it's consenting and it is not hurting anyone outside of consenting, who cares? If you're not doing it on like the courthouse front lawn where school kids can see it, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, my sexual fantasies are dangerous, you know, and it has nothing to do with the act itself. It's the situation, you know. It's like there's certain situations that turn me on.
Say that again. Sorry.
There's certain situations that turn me on that probably wouldn't benefit me in real life. You know, like thinking about, you know, fucking some friend of yours wife or something like that and getting caught. Right. You know, it's like a turn on.
Oops.
Yeah. In real life, you would never do such a thing. But just thinking about the badness of that and her being bad when in real life she wouldn't be. She wouldn't do it, you know, but. The thought that you're taking some devoted, trusting chick and turning her into a whore, you know, while your friends at work is a turn on.
And I think that's actually a very common fantasy.
Yeah, so all my fantasies would get me killed if I went through with them. So
they'll just stay that, a fantasy.
Yeah.
Or Lisa in a wig.
Nah. We're not a prop stage yet. She still does it for me.
Who ordered the pizza?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't pay for it. What can I do to, you know?
We did TV repairman one time. She texted me. She texted me from the hotel room and said the TV wasn't working. So I just went into total character, knocked on the door, and she answers. She goes, "You don't have your key?" I went, "Why would I have a key? I'm a TV repairman." And she like kind of rolls her eyes, and I went, "Well, I am, ma'am. Where's your TV?"
Well, if you were a repairman, you would be able to see it, know that it was in fact a TV.
And she goes, "It's in here. Come on." So I come in, and she gets it. She sits down on the edge of the bed, and she says, "It's just not working. It won't turn on. You know, it's just not. It's just dead." So I turn around and look at her. I go, "Well, I'm about to take a look at it, so why don't you just relax?" So I turn around. I see that the plug on the TV's, it looks like it's in, but I pushed it and the TV started working for real. So I said, "Well, your TV's fixed, ma'am." I said, "That'll be $500. And she, of course, says, I have $500. And I say, "Surely we can work out something."
Boing.
And she goes, "I love my husband and I would never, you know, compromise that, you know, to take care of a TV bill. You're just going to have to come back." It's like, "Yeah, I'm very busy and I won't come back. So take your fucking pants off." And of course she goes, "All right." I went, "Yeah, that's right."
It's the hesitation that's the turn on.
Yeah.
Knowing you're making her do something she doesn't want to do.
Mm-hmm. And it just went on from there. It was hilarious, though. And it actually got me going. It was like, this is kind of fun. You know, I don't know what's sexier, her or me pulling this off.
Yeah, I think it was her.
Yeah, I'm sure. But it's so funny when you get into character in those things. I'm like pissed off at her. It's like, you cheating whore.
And then just to be a dick, the next day when you guys were home, you actually sent a TV repairman to the house.
Yeah, with a Chris Farley looking dude. Fat guy in a little coat. But, you know, it's like, that's as bad as it gets for me. You know, the spontaneous go into character thing. And usually she just rolls her eyes like, okay. It's almost like, can't you just fuck me? Do we have to go through this? Do I have to be, you know, Meryl Streep every time I give up pussy?
Can't I just be sleepy sometimes?
Can't I just spread my legs? You do your thing, and you know, because I'm really not into this right now.
And you just move your head to the side so I can see the TV.
Which, by the way, is one of the things I love about her. She like never tells me no, but she's very quick to go, "There's nothing in this for me, so just do your thing." Which I
seriously
love.
Seriously, don't worry about me. Just
which
just
I love, because there's times where she doesn't say that, so I know she's into it, and I spend a lot of time and stuff like that, but sometimes she's just like, "Don't mind me, just do your thing."
Just here.
Yeah. I said, "I kind of like this, you know." I said, "Can you like get on your phone and act like you're looking at Facebook or something?" She's like, "Oh my God." I mean, can you add to the boredom of your, I mean, this. Yeah. She's like, "You're so fucked up, man."
Or right in the middle of it. Yeah. It's like, yeah. "Oh my God, The Onion is so funny."
Yeah.
Here's a headline.
Yeah. A YouTube video or something.
Look at the kitten.
Yeah.
Look, it's kittens with babies.
Which would be totally something she would look at. So, yeah, it's crazy. But a good time, nonetheless.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, it is. So, all I got to say is things are good.
Well, I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
Good is good.
Yeah. So, that pretty much, I know we're getting close to wrapping things up here.
Yes.
We had some, you had something you sent over, this morning. What was that about?
Oh, let me see if I can bring it up without screwing up everything. It was a Nevada Republican state legislator. Her name is Michelle Fiore.
Mm-hmm.
A Republican member of the Nevada State Assembly. And let me see and find it. This is a very long article. She's known, she's just done some things that are kind of wacky where you're like, oh God. And last weekend, she was discussing new legislation that she's proposing in Nevada that will allow people who are terminally ill to seek alternative treatments. Apparently, there are cures for cancer that the medical community has overlooked. And this woman has the prescription, which is apparently salt water.
Yeah.
She says, if you have cancer, which I believe is a fungus. Now, this woman is not a doctor. She is simply a state legislator.
Right.
But she believes cancer is a fungus. And we can put a PIC line into your body. And we're flushing with, say, salt water through that line and flushing out the fungus.
Hmm.
And this is the basis for her wanting. And I guess I don't understand why people in Nevada can't seek alternative treatments. I don't know anything about that. But
is she like a fucking doctor or something?
No. No. In fact, she. Let me see if I can find it. She's a filmmaker who made the movie called Siren.
Oh, really?
Yes. And she's in the movie. And there's a picture of her in go-go boots and a little short skirt and a bustier type thing.
What is that movie about again?
I don't know. I know it has 4.8 out of 10 stars on IMDb.
Let me look it up here. I got to see who this chick is. She sounds like a total tool.
Well, I think that was kind of the point, yes. Yeah.
I mean, anybody that makes wild claims like this who never picked up a fucking scalpel before.
Well, last year she was elected to be the majority leader of the assembly and then chairwoman of the assembly taxation committee. However, after it was discovered that she owed more than $1 million in back taxes, she was removed from both of her leadership positions.
And what's her name again?
Michelle with one L and then Fiore, F-I-O-R-E.
And what year was this movie?
I don't know. It's just called Siren.
No S on the end of it.
Correct. That was an Elle Macpherson movie.
Okay, because there's a Siren 1, 2, and 3. let's see who's in this one. Oh, here we go. Writers, Michelle Fiore. So she was one of the writers on this movie. Let me find her. I need to see. Is she blonde?
Yes, blondish.
Yeah. Blondish? Yeah, this is her. She looks like a fucking idiot.
Yes. One of those hottish women that become, you know, Republican stars because yeah. They're hottish. But have nary a brain cell between their ears.
So like a Fox News anchor.
Exactly. But they're blonder than she is.
Yeah, and hotter. God, I love.
Yeah, those gals know how to wear boots.
Oh, those girls are hot. But, God, I don't want to talk to them.
Exactly.
I mean, at all. It's like, are you a Democrat? Shut up. I don't even want to get into this with you. I just want to see you naked. And yes, I'm a Democrat. Aren't I despicable?
I'm going to give you some socialist sex right now.
Yes. The government told me I could do you. And they said that you have to. Let me.
And the government's going to pay me for it.
And I've seen you on TV and I know you believe me. Anyway. Stacy.
Yes, Lexi Poo.
Another enjoyable threesome podcast. We talked about some cool stuff.
Yeah.
We talked about Leonard Nimoy, the death of Leonard Nimoy and how cool he was. We talked about what else here? What am I missing? A little bit of fantasy sex with a comedy twist to it. As Lex the TV repairman. We talked about some rock stars. Talked about the English breeding ground for gay sex. What am I missing?
There was the beginning. We talked about Liz Taylor a lot.
Oh, yeah. The Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and a few twisted, fucked up movies you need to watch.
Yes.
All that stuff. And Paul Newman. And there you go.
Yes.
All right. So that wraps up another Threesome podcast. I want to thank Drew Hillis at DBC for making sure LT2 rolls heavily through the day 24/7. Also, make sure you go to threesomepodcast.com for your...
The number three.
Thank you, Stacy. For your download of the podcast when it's up and ready to go, which will be when?
Monday.
Every Monday, there's a new podcast.
Yes.
So
that's what we're aiming for.
That's what we're aiming for, and that's what you'll get, okay? So, we're getting good at this, so to speak.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah.
27 episodes in.
We're getting a regiment down. Let's just put it that way. So, yes. With that said, we are out of here. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.